This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
By their arguments, ladies and gentlemen, you may know them. When people begin to introduce the non sequitur, you know you're onto something.
I was watching Hitchens in a debate the other day, and they just don't make him like him anymore, do they?
Yeah, I actually am a huge fan of his. I mean, there's a few things I disagree with him on, but he was one of the greatest orators and spokesmen for some of these topics of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Welcome everybody, back to the show. If you're just joining us from last night, we had a really good time with Cult of Dusty. Everybody loved having him on. They responded really well to Dusty. So that was good. Very good. I know Steve had a good time. Learning about,
I did. I was surprised. I was expecting to be having more backlash. I know there's been a lot of history with Dusty. He's been around a long time. A lot of controversial stuff. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally nobody brought up anything. I was like, "Wow, this is awesome."
But I'm gonna make just one quick announcement. We will be on Saturday. We'll be having a private hangout with our Patreons. So if you are a patron, you can meet us at, or meet me. Steve will be gone for the weekend, but you can meet me at 4 o'clock, and we will be going over what we've got coming up in terms of the rest of this month for the show. And we're actually going to let you guys vote on a couple of shows that we're going to do. We've got something different that we're going to try. So you can join us for that if you're a Patreon. If you are not and you want to be, you can go to Patreon.com/nonsequitur and sign up for that. Tonight we are going to be having a discussion on slavery, and in just a second I will lay out what exactly the proposition is. But before we do that, let's meet who we have joining us tonight. For the first time, we have psychopath. I hope I'm going to say this right. Psychopath. Steve,
I can never get it right either. Psychopath atheist, psychopathist. Like we call him psychopathist. No, psychopath atheist.
Peace. What's going on, everybody? Psychopathist, actually, but yeah, what's going on?
Psychopathist. Yeah,
psychopathist. Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you. Right. I that's why I wasn't kidding. Psychopathist, but
yeah. By the way, Dave, I'm seeing the chat. People are saying that they can't see me. Is that am I not showing up? Yeah, I see me too.
Well, you're
looking radiant as ever.
Because there's a green tint to your jacket and your shirt is green?
My shirt's blue.
Shirt's blue. Yeah, I see blue.
Definitely
whatever.
Got green in it because it's kind of fuzzing out a little bit.
Well, it's only, okay.
It's good. It's fine.
Yeah, it's good. We're good. So welcome, psychopathiest. All day long, I've been trying to like sound that out, like psychopath atheist, psychopath atheist. But welcome.
Yeah, some people call me that too.
Right, I'm just going to call you Psycho for the rest of the stream. That's fine. Cool?
Yeah,
he's definitely that. No, okay.
Awesome. and coming back to join us for the second time, he was with us about a week and a half ago, I believe. JF, welcome back, JF.
It's a great pleasure to be here. This is such a great show. I like the philosophical aspect of it. I like you guys, what you do, and I'm up anytime.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, bud. I really appreciate that.
That was nice of you.
I'm going to let you guys take a second now and just introduce yourselves and let people know what you do, why you do it. Psycho, you want to start out? I know you've got a show that you do quite often.
I'm a black atheist, which is odd because most of our people are very spiritual. But that's why I kind of started off doing, but then I kind of delved a little bit deeper into the social aspects of the black diaspora in this country, and as a whole, because I'm a Pan-African slash black nationalist. I'm wondering what me and this guy is going to pretty much disagree on some things, but we'll get deep into all that. But I focus on the issues going on in my community, basically socially, economically, and politically. And that's pretty much it. That's the mainstay of my show. For the most part.
Okay. Thank you. And JF.
Well, I'm pretty intimidated by psychopathist icon. It looks rough. I'm intimidated to have him as an opponent. But I'm Jean-François Gariepi. I'm a biologist. I've been studying society of monkeys, social interactions in humans at the doctoral, postdoctoral level, neuroscience, surgery, and now evolution and the mathematics of the emergence of life. And I've also been making cases about moral stuff like slavery. And my position today will be simply that slavery is often demonized. It was an institution. I'm not going to make a case that slavery should be good and always accepted, but I think that the institution is getting demonized. We'll see through many, there's many points at which there is deception in our representation of what slavery was. To me, it was a working relationship that did involve a violation of consent. So it is ultimately a moral violation. However, slavery ultimately was good for the black people who got involved into it. It was favorable to the well-being of their descendant and to the existence of their descendant. My understanding from the accent of psychopathist is that he's in America right now, and we may have a case of a black person who depends on slavery for his own existence. There would be no black person in America if it wasn't of slavery. And so we have to accept it as a imperfect past aspect of our civilization, but certainly not to be rejected, because if you reject it, you reject the existence of biodiversity in the human population of the U.S. today.
Okay, I'm going to let you respond, Psycho. I think I was going to lay out the what the problems. I think he did it there though, so we don't need for me to go back into it. The only thing that I will ask of both of you is that I know this will probably get in some parts a little heated. Just don't talk over each other so that people can hear both of your sides. We'll give you each all the time that you need to make your say your side and get your argument out. But just try not to talk over each other. That's my one pet peeve. All right, Psycho, do you want to respond to anything that JF just said there?
He's made a claim that obviously, yes, I am black American, but he made a claim that without slavery, my existence wouldn't be here pretty much. And when you say I wouldn't be here, I'm assuming you mean my existence or my existence in this country. I would argue both points. How can you say that I wouldn't exist if I wasn't in this land? That just doesn't compute in my head. And for you to say that I wouldn't exist as far as being on this land. Everybody migrated over to this land. I see a France flag in your background. I hear your accent, so I'm assuming that you're French. So by your estimation, without slavery, your people would be a stronger people, because wasn't it slavery that was part of the demise of Napoleon's reign because of what happened out in Haiti when the Haitians revolt, turned around and pretty much bankrupt Napoleon to the point where he had to sell his portion of land over here that became the Louisiana Purchase at some point in time. So by your own claim, your land would be a stronger entity with if slavery didn't happen, if you didn't focus so much on that island, and you could have just been left that island alone. But y'all decided to keep on making that fight and lost, by the way. And by that point, y'all had to turn around, sell your land over here in America and the Americas, I should say. And then Napoleon ended up losing all his political support. Everybody turned on him, exiled him, if I am mistaken, from his own country. So do you live here in America? Because I'm not too familiar with you. Do you even live here?
So I've lived in the U.S. for 5 years. To be precise, this is a Quebecois flag. So I'm a descendant of the French people. However, my ancestors that were French have traveled to America, into Quebec, around the 17th century, among the first waves of migration of white people from France to the East Coast of America. And I want to say, as a Quebecois person, I want to deny being involved and my ancestors being involved in any sort of slavery of black people. Today, I'm making a case as someone who's an observer of the American situation. Huh?
Can you prove that?
What did you say? How can I prove that? Well, genetically, I can prove that I descend from French people who have traveled from France back in the 17th century. In fact, my last name, Gariepi, has been traced back to the single person who left France in the 17th century and went into Quebec. We know historically that there is no trace of slavery. We found a total of 13 slaves in Montreal, and it's a very historic finding. It was the first time we ever found evidence that slavery has occurred. So it did occur in Quebec, but in a restricted mansion, in fact, in a single house in my nation. Otherwise, I descend from a people who has not been engaged in slavery of black people. And since I left my ancestors left the European continent before the Atlantic slave trade. Sorry, I had the difficulty pronunciating it. I can say safely that for the last thousands of years, I've not been involved in lineages that have been enslaving other humans. That's at the personal level. Now, as an observer of the American situation, I still have a rather positive outlook on slavery, not that everything was good about it, but I would point out that we can also make a case that any institution where violence occurs is bad. Someone could be coming here and make the case that marriage is a violent institution because some husbands beat their wives. I think that would be unfair to the institution. What we have to recognize is that, yes, marriage can sometimes put you in a condition where you will be the victim of violence, but that it has a positive outcomes on the rest of society and that it's not always a violent operation. I think that slavery, when you look, for example, at the state of black people today, of course, it's undeniable that the descendants of slaves in the U.S. have one of the best circumstances for any black person on the entire planet in terms of literacy, in terms of economic opportunity, in terms of satisfaction with their life, and in terms of the quality of life that they benefit from. That is a consequence of slavery, and we have to deal with it. Why is it that essentially, if you were a black person in Africa 400 years ago, there was two outputs for you. Either your descendants would be transported to the U.S. and work on cotton farms and the likes in the south of the U.S., or your descendants would stay in Africa. Would you recognize, Psychopathias, that those who were brought to the U.S. have secured a better future for their children?
No, absolutely not. I'm actually a component for reparations too, by the way. I forgot to add that. And it's funny because you mentioned the whole Montreal connection and everything else with slavery. But as I said, I'm a component of reparations, and we happen to know at least over 20 major corporations globally that has benefited directly from the transatlantic slave trade. And one of them being would be the Canadian National Railway Company that's based in Montreal and Quebec, Canada. So you sure your ancestors had nothing to do directly with slavery? I would question that. Again, you know, because, again, this was a global thing. This wasn't just this country. You know, I'm sure you well studied enough to understand how the transatlantic slave trade worked and how many countries was involved with this. And when we talk in reparations, I'm talking globally, but mainly in this country. But again, I can name you a bunch of corporations that directly benefited from slavery, major corporations in this country and globally all the way around. So, like I said, if I dug deep enough in your ancestry, I'm sure I can find some kind of connection with your ancestors in slavery. I'm positive about it.
Well, you can. There are books written on the Gariepi. It's something that has been studied a lot. So I'm reporting what I know from this genealogy. You are free to do your own research. But I don't think that your comment there addresses my point. You talk about exploitation. It's essentially a Marxist argument. It's like white people would have benefited from slavery, therefore reparations. But this does not address my point. My point is there is a higher... There is a better lifestyle and a better way of life for Black people in America today than there is in Botswana. I don't think you can deny this. Do you deny that the Black population of the U.S. are currently in a better condition, both at the IQ, educational, literacy, economic performance level, and quality of life than their African peers?
No, because a lot of these stats are based on when they classify African Americans in this country, they don't distinguish between the actual descendants of African slaves opposed to the immigrants that came over here. That's probably only like second generation away removed from Africa or whatever country they come from. A lot of these people that benefit on high on education are people that came over here from other countries, immigrants, black, but they also, they're immigrants, and they come over here and they get their little scholarships and everything and their funds and everything, and they're able to go through school and they're able to get the economical backing to be able to go through all this, while people like myself who's born here are unable to get these same resources and everything in order to get further in their education. So a lot of these stats and numbers are skewed to make it seem one way when it's really another.
Well, I don't think the skewing is enormous because there's more than 80% of the Black population of the U.S. who are direct descendants, whose ancestors are majority slaves in the past. And so whatever effect you mentioned there would be small. But let's go down to it. Let's go to the poorest Black populations in America. I claim that they live with civil rights that are superior to those who are in Botswana or in other African countries. I mean, even the average population in the U.S., their IQ for Black people is around 85. We're talking about 10 to 20 points higher than most African countries that are sub-Saharan. And so we're talking about a huge advantage. And there's also race mixing opportunities. For example, the Black population of America today in the U.S., they are the whitest persons genetically. They are the whitest Black persons on planet Earth. They have up to 17% on average of white genes that they have in their own descent. And so there have been opportunities to access a gene pool of people who have changed their characteristics. And today they find themselves with probably the highest average IQ in all Black populations across the planet, down to 20 points of advantage on some of their peers, like Botswana is at 70, for example.
Yeah. Well, let me put this out there. You mentioned a lot about mixed blacks and everything else and white. I don't consider mixed people to be black myself. Let me just put that out there. So when you're throwing these mixed people in with black people, I question that because, again, these are mixed people. They, you know, they have one black parent, one white parent, or Asian parent, or Tiano Indian parent, whatever the case may be. But they automatically get thrown in the black category, and I don't subscribe to that. That's a one drop rule mindset that I actually fight against, because these people could easily be considered white and not black. So again, these numbers are skewed.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know that there are remaining per black populations in America. People get their 23andMe test and they realize, oh yeah, I have 5% white European genes, 10%, 15%. That's more likely what mm-hmm. they're going to find. I mean, this is a question of identity, and I would not deny your right to identify. If you say to me a per black person is someone who can trace 100% of their genes to Africa, I'm absolutely fine with it. The fact is there are people who have explored other branches, and they are often categorized as black in the US. They have decided to race mix a little bit. There were lots of love stories between slave owners and slaves, and it led to babies.
Are you kidding me? Love stories? Romantic, story. Yeah. Those were rapes. What? You call that a love story? Rapes? Really? Really? That's what you call that?
There's been a lot of consensual sex happening between.
Let's not get this twisted. What happened out in slavery was not jungle fever. This was not what's going on today in this country where we're seeing all this race mixing and everything else going on. No, this was rapes. All right. This was what was happening. These were overseers and slave masters sitting up here taking our women's virginity, we're not even gonna play this game. Is this guy serious? Love stories?
Well, ahead, do you have evidence that the entirety of race mixing events in the US for the last 200 years were all non-consensual?
I'm saying what happened in slavery was not consensual. Yes, that would be deemed rape today. Yes, especially if you're looking under what they consider rape under this rape culture. You're going to tell me that wouldn't be considered rape under what happened under slavery? You going to tell me them? You want to tell me those women had the option to say no? They could have told the slave master no? Could they have told that overseer no? That was rape.
I think that in many cases, they could say no. I think that there is some women who were part of the slave population who were doing their work as slaves. Of course, which as pointed out by Altype on YouTube, by the way, slave status in the US is very similar to serf status in the monarchy. And so white people have also been deprived of rights in the past. And we kind of deal with it by saying, okay, it was a different world. But of course, there was consent. There was option. A woman could have chosen to try to charm her slave owner, or she could have decided not to charm him. I don't think that all of the sex that happened between blacks and whites in America was a rape.
Every single thing that happened in slavery, demon as far as mixed children going on, happened through rape. Again, they was not, our women were not in any position of power. They was not in a position where they could say no. If the slave masters and overseers wanted our women, that's what was going to happen. And they would kill their husbands in order to have them if they had to. They would have them. And there was nothing the slaves can do. I don't even know what you're talking about right now. You're talking this whole promiscuous slave narrative crap that I don't subscribe to at all.
Well, I think it's essentially you have an ideological opposition. You say everything that happens under this condition, I will call it a rape. Of course, I have a more subtle understanding of it, and I don't think that you have brought evidence that convinces me that it was all rape. I don't deny that there were rapes. There were rapes, of course, in slavery, just like there was in society, and there is still in society today. But to designate an entire population and say all of the sex that happened there was all rape, I just can't in the absence of evidence.
I just told you, they was not in position of power. They was in, they was not in, they was not in a position where they can even say no anything. That was rape. That was rape.
What you're saying is that they couldn't consent because of the slavery aspect. That negates any sort of consent, because either they would have to feel like they would, you know, they had to do this or suffer some sort of repercussions. Or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, possibly death. Yes.
Yeah, they lack what's called informed choice, or the ability to choose. Is that if you're a slave, you actually have, you're under the threat of punishment at any given time, right? I mean, so are you arguing that because they're a slave, consent is off the table? You cannot, nobody can actually give consent as long as they're a slave.
The same way if a correctional officer in jail is caught having sex with a prisoner, even if the prisoner consented to have sex, that's still considered rape, and that correctional officer will lose his job and get pressed up for charges. Mm. And the prisoner could have said, "Yes, I want to do this," and it still doesn't matter.
Well, okay. I get the argument, and it's not nonsensical at all. I will say it's a view of the world, but I'm very careful when it comes to broad strokes about rape, because under this definition, one could make the argument with a similar argument around relationships in the workplace. There's always a boss, and there's always someone being a little higher in the positions than the employee. And by this standard, you could argue that the employee feels extorted systematically, so that all workplace relationships are rape.
I don't necessarily hold that position either, but this is a little bit different than what we're talking about under captivity. But go ahead, can we move on to the next point?
Yeah, that's a false equivalency, I would say, actually.
How is that a false equivalency? I'm saying that that a similar argument can be made for another system. The thing is, if you are to attribute a rape, there's a victim and someone committing the crime. For me to attribute, to say a crime occurred, I need a victim. I need someone who says, yeah, I was raped. It's not my impression that all women who have engaged in race mixing in these dates were raped, that they have claimed to be rape victims. And so I'm extremely careful in attributing rape as a third party without having a victim telling me, yeah, I was raped.
I think what Steve was saying is that, just to clarify that, I think what he's saying is that in the workplace, it's more of a, there's not sort of that, this is my, you know, with slaves, they were considered property. You know, you had ownership of them to a certain extent. In the workplace, it's not like that. You're either on equal footing, but you're both considered people separate from each other. You're not behoving to the person that you work with. So I think the entire point they're saying is that just the slaves felt some sort of, if they didn't go along with this, even, you know, whether they wanted to or not, if they didn't go along with it, there could be horrible repercussions to their physical well-being.
In prison, you have color authority, right? You have jurisdiction over a person. You have, they do not have autonomy any longer, right? They're a ward of the state. They are, for all practical purposes, property of the state, which would, again, like Ty was saying, in slavery, people are property, right? So there's a false equivalency there, because when you're working for somebody, you're not property of the corporation. There's some equality there. Can people use that authoritative position that they're in to coerce? Yes. That's not rape. That is just, it's unethical, but it's not construed as rape because they don't have the color of authority that they're operating over. Or is, as a psychopathist was saying, the slave owner has the dominion over their slaves. They are considered property to them.
Well, I mean, there are some leftists who want to consider this as a rape. There are some leftists who say if you are under any circumstance of pressure, it is rape. And there is a valid argument to be, if you want to be absolute about the definitions. Yes. Okay. Everything that in my environment contributes to changing my choice. I don't always feel that all of the options are open. And I feel that if I take some options, I will pay some cost. And what I say is that first, I'm not sure that all slaves were subject to violence. I've been looking at corporal punishment statistics, and it doesn't look like all slaves were subjected to whipping or to death threats. It seems that some slaves were living as kind of a kind of co-evolving life form with their slave owners. They had their own homes produced by the slave owners. They had a place to live, and they were satisfied with it. And so I'm not sure that I can generalize on the slave experience like you guys are doing. I think that there are some slaves who are experiencing this as an improvement of their condition compared to where they were in Africa.
No, no, that's not true. Most of the slaves that had these homes and everything else that you're talking about, these were slaves that were generations in and so far removed from Africa, they couldn't even tell you what tribe they probably was from. Like, they were broken down mentally and colonized. The second they got here, they were stripped of their culture, stripped of their language, stripped of everything. So they didn't have anything to compare it to. They was born on the plantation. So what was they comparing it to? So I'm a little confused how you're coming up with this narrative.
Well, what I'm saying is that if you look at how they had access to literacy, how their own babies could survive, you mentioned it, they were reproducing. I mean, there are people in Africa who couldn't reproduce, who would be stuck as slaves, who would be sterilized. And I'm saying their mode of life was not necessarily experienced as violent by all of them. I'd love to have testimony of slaves. I don't think we have many, but I'd love to know about it. But the fact is they could eat, they could have literacy at higher rates than Africa, and they could reproduce. All of these things are things that are not accessible to every Black person back in the days on this earth. In fact, just the idea of being cared for and being in an environment where they can have some form of health care was an advantage that they had. The simple fact that their babies could survive and could live on this plantation is experience. I don't know about the experience. I'd love to know. Do you have testimonies of slaves and how they felt about living on these plantations? As far as I know, you cannot work if you don't know. If you are living under a terrible state of violence, at some point there would be a punishment for slave owners who are too violent against their slaves. And ultimately what you want is slaves that are happy to work and that are in condition physically to do the work. And so the amounts of violence that we measure, I think that Altype reports them as maximally 0.5 whippings per slave per year. And it seems that there were some plantations where violence was regular and some plantations where it was absolutely absent.
Yeah. The whole literacy thing on the plantation is actually a joke for you to say that. It was illegal for slaves to even read. The only people that was allowed to read were certain particular slaves on the plantation that they chose to read the Bible. That's the only book they was allowed to read. They was allowed to read the Bible. They taught them how to read so they could read the Bible and preach the scriptures to the slaves. And they would take, so, and they wouldn't, this wouldn't even be every plantation. This would be one particular plantation in the area. And they would take this one slave who actually knows how to read and preach the Bible to everybody. And he would go from plantation to plantation to plantation in that local area, preaching to the other slaves and everything else. And one of these slaves would be Nat Turner. He was one of these people that they actually chose to do this. And he was one of the only slaves on his plantation that knew how to read. Actually, he was the only slave, excuse me, that knew how to read on his plantation. They would travel him around from plantation to plantation. That's how he actually got all the connections he got before he actually had his famous slave revolt, was because he knew all the slaves from traveling around from plantation to plantation, and he was able to rally them up in order to have the famous slave revolt out in Virginia. So let's not act like all like slaves had this high education system and everything else is that third. No, that's not the case. It was illegal for slaves to read. It was not legal for Blacks to actually, as a collective, to start reading until after the Civil War. So, yeah.
Well, I've seen the statutes. There are laws, you are correct, and I oppose to these laws that were denying the right to read to black people. But I would say they were not getting applied because the measured rate of literacy for black slaves in the 19th century is around 20%. And it's an improvement of their condition if you compare with Africa. Of course, you add the white population that clearly had an advantage. They were at around 80. But there was definitely a part of the population that was accessing knowledge that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
Just
compare the descendants of today, for example. The descendants of the slaves of today, they definitely have access to an educational system that gets them to a much higher level of education and much higher IQ. At 85, they are the best black population, the most well-placed across the world.
Well, I think I addressed that talking point earlier as far as the descendants of slaves here opposed to the immigrants that come over here. Again, these numbers get conflated and everything else. That's why we're having this whole new movement that we're doing when we're pushing for reparations. We're being very specific on who we're talking about. Because, again, we have a lot of immigrants that come over to this country who's benefited a lot from what my ancestors went through. You know, pre-1965, you know, it wasn't this big influx of black immigrants coming over here. So now that we got this big influx of black immigrants coming over here who's getting all these benefits and everything, all these small business loans, who people like myself are not privy to. Certain scholarships, you know, foreign aid, all types of other stuff that people like myself are not privy to. So they come over here and after the civil rights movement, and they're able to benefit a whole lot more than we actually are. And we're the people who actually fought for it and went through the blood, sweat, and tears. So we're the ones who actually need the most help. So I'm not concerning myself when I'm talking reparations with the immigrants that came over here. If your family doesn't descend pre-1965, I don't even want to have a reparations talk with you because your family didn't even experience Jim Crow. Your family have to go through Jim Crow as well. And that's another thing we stand away from, because this isn't all about just slavery, because after slavery, we had the whole Jim Crow thing going on where we actually was trying to build up these small towns, trying to build up these communities. And every time we had our communities built up, people came around and tore it down. We got huge examples of this, like Rosewood, Black Wall Street out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we had these flourishing black communities that got attacked and everything else by jealous white neighbors who didn't want to see black people coming up after the Civil War. But these were Southern states, and they were still upset about the decline of the economy and everything, because we all know what happened with the Civil War. The Civil War was not about freeing slaves. Let's put that out there. It was not about freeing slaves. It was about the North actually wanted to get all the wealth up to the North that the South had, because the South was the wealthy state during this before the Civil War. They was the ones with all the wealth. The North was actually the poor states, and they was trying to get some of that wealth up to the North. And one of the ways of doing that was crippling their main workforce, which was slaves and everything else. And you know, it was all political move, a whole bunch of other stuff going on. We could talk about that for hours. But at the end of the day, we was promised something at the end of that war that we never got. You know, that we was promised 40 acres and a mule and $100 a person. And we never got that. We never received that. They pushed it along so far. Then Andrew Jackson got into office, and he completely abolished anything that was in motion to happen for us to get reparations. And since 1862, they have gave out billions of land in this billions of acres of land in this country, and not one inch of that land went to black Americans that descend from slavery, not one inch. And it's been billions of acres since 1862. And so we're owed. This country owes us a huge debt, and I'm going to keep pressing until we get that debt paid.
All right. I think it's a good moment to talk about reparations. I will just, I think I have a different view of the North and South difference of development. The South was rich in that they had plantations. They had a basic economic activity going on. But the North, in many indicators, including the building of railroads, for example, much more common in the North. And so they had a type of development that was much more modern. And I would argue that was ultimately more wealth in the North, but it was a form of wealth that was in technological development and industrial progress. That being said, it's a point of detail. As far as reparations goes, I think it would be the worst idea possible. I disagree on two points. The first is that what is the basis for reparation? What is the status quo? What is the zero point at which we owe you reparation? And I would argue you cannot demand reparation to descendants of white people. You cannot steal money from the people of today because they're white, because you perceive that your population was owed this in the past. You cannot punish new individuals for crimes that were committed by other individuals, even if it was their ancestor. That is my view morally. But I would say also in pragmatic terms, paying reparations to Blacks in America would be a terrible ID for them. It would put them in a state where they are entitled to some income, to some amount of money, without having worked for it, with a system that is absolutely anti-meritocratic. So you would find yourself with essentially a social welfare system for Blacks, which would still depress success in the Black population. Because we know the key in white societies on how we reward success and how the proportion of the reward is proportional to the success and to the utility of the goods produced. So someone who starts a company that is bad will fail. Someone who starts a company that produces iPhones and that people like will have success and will have more money. If we do not have such a meritocratic approach with the Black population, if we treat them as victims entitled to baseline amounts of money, we are destroying the only chance that the Black society would have within the U.S. to reformulate itself on new grounds, on grounds that are meritocratic, that reward the best members of their society with more money, in the same way we've advanced white society.
I totally disagree. I don't see how Black people gaining wealth will be bad for Black people. I'm a little confused by that statement, but I do want to address this whole notion that, my ancestors aren't the ones who enslaved people, or my ancestors didn't do this, or I'm not my ancestors, so why should I have to pay reparations? Well, my ancestors aren't the ones who dropped the A-bomb on Japan, right? But yet we had to help pay reparations back in the late 80s, early 90s, when Japan got their reparations 40 something years later. Right. My ancestors didn't commit genocide on the Native Americans. But yet my ancestors and me are still paying reparations to the Native Americans. My ancestors didn't put the Jews in the gas chambers and correctional camps. We didn't do that. But yet we are still helping pay reparations annually to Israel. So we have been helping pay for reparations forever since we've been paying taxes. So, nobody cares. But when we talk about getting our reparations, everybody's like, oh, well, my ancestors didn't have nothing to do with it. My ancestors didn't do this. I didn't do anything. I had nothing to do with it. Well, when did Black people do any of this stuff? We've been paying for it. So that's like crying me crocodile tears with that one. So that's a horrible notion. Like I said, there have been groups of individuals getting paid by globally and by this country for decades for stuff that we had nothing to do with. And how come when it's time for us to get paid and it's time for us to get what's due to us in this country, what was promised to us, by the way? Because slavery happened before World War II. Slavery happened slavery didn't happen. Slavery happened during the genocide of the Native Americans, so I can't say that. But at the end of the day, still, they got land. They got reparations. They got money. They get money. They get checked all the time. Just for being a registered Native American. They get a check all the time. They get tax free land. They get free scholarships. They get all this stuff. We don't get nothing. Then people say, well, Native Americans aren't doing that great and everything else. Well, let us not do great. Give us some land. Give us some access to some casinos. Give us a check all the time, periodically throughout the course of the year, just for being a registered descendant of a slave. And let us worry about how we do on that land. Don't try to sit up here and predict what we're going to do or how it's going to work out. Give it to us and let us figure it out. And let the cars go as they lay. It is what it is.
Well, I'm all for African and African-American self-determination. So the idea of having you in a place and you do what you want with it, I'm absolutely with you there. That being said, on the question of reparation, I cannot help myself but think that you are trying to fix injustices by committing more injustices. The fact is that there were white servants also in the 17th century in America. There was one for every four black slaves. How would we know if you're a descendant of the servants, the white servants, or a descendant of the black slaves? And I think you mentioned other types of reparations that were given, which I disagree. I don't think we should pay reparations to Israel. I don't think we should pay reparations to Japan either. It's sad, but we do have to do it. It seems that it's been chosen against our will, but I disagree with it. But it's not by taking money, which is essentially a race-based request. At this point, what you're suggesting is essentially it will be assumed that the white people of America will be paying the reparations, and the black people of America will be somewhat assumed, if they can demonstrate that their ancestors were there before 1960s, that they must have been slaves. But the reality is much more complex. You're going to steal money from people who may not have hurt your ancestors at all.
Not just about slavery, it's also about Jim Crow. Let me just put that out there.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, as far as Jim Crow goes, yes, there were legal disadvantages to black people. I recognize this. It's a sad past, and I'm against that. I'm for the equal recognition of everyone in our society with equal civil rights, but I'm not for allowing reparations, which I see as theft.
You was going to say something?
Let me ask you real quick. I want to get something for clarification. Would you be against like having how we have reservations, casinos for Indians? Are you suggesting something along the lines for African Americans that want to go live on a on their own land? If we somehow like we said, okay, we're going to give you this portion of that and have it like an own nation kind of thing, self-segregation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I support that. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I also support that in the form of probably America be balkanized into various states with various preferences. I think we definitely need to ensure that every population lives with the consequences of their choices, or else you have a kind of parasitic relationship that develops. You have people, for example, demanding social welfare from the state in the U.S., and social welfare disproportionately advantages the poor and takes from the rich. And I wish that we were in a world in which people would live with the consequence of what they vote for. In other words, if the black population was isolated into a big enough state or a big enough set of states where, okay, you want to vote Democrat, you want to vote left, okay, you do it, but you're going to live with the consequence of this. And then right-wingers could have their own part of America in which they decide to go forward with right-wing policies, and they live both with the negative and positive consequences of it.
Where does that leave me, somebody who doesn't represent either party, because I'm not a leftist or righty?
Well, I mean, as part of the black population of America, you are extremely more likely to be voting on the left on various issues, right?
Well, not all the time, no. There's a lot of issues that the left support that I don't support. And there are issues on the right that people support that I don't support. I don't align myself to either party. I actually believe that black people hold the position that black people need to stop voting blindly and lining themselves to one party. I believe that black people should hold their votes hostage, and we should not align ourselves with anybody until somebody comes along lines talking about, again, reparations. I'm going to keep going back to that because that's what I'm really pushing right now. Until somebody's talking about reparations, regardless of the party, we should hold our votes hostage and not vote for anybody on a national level.
Now, that's your personal position, and I can totally understand that there is diversity in the black population, but you recognize that if you were to end up in a kind of black ethnostate in the U.S., you would have to live with a population that has voted 95% and more for Obama, for example.
Those are the people that voted, yeah, absolutely. The numbers are going down, though, as far as like Democratic support with black people each election, because a lot of black people are getting upset with the Democratic Party. They feel like we're being left behind. Everybody else's agenda is getting pushed in front of ours. It seems like every time it's our turn for our agendas to get pushed in front, something else pops up. An immigration issue pops up where that becomes the forefront. A gay law or something that wants to be passed over all of a sudden becomes the primary thing. All of a sudden, some women are going through something and feminism becomes the primary issue. We always tend to get pushed to the back burner. It's always somebody else we always got to wait for somebody else to fix their issues. So a lot of black people are starting to get a little bit annoyed at this. And you got people like myself who's smart enough to realize the conservatives ain't the way to go either. So what we need to do, myself, me personally, I feel what we need to do is form our own party locally and start doing what we have to do on a local level. And as far as the national level, again, hold our votes hostage until somebody is actually coming with a serious black agenda, not a minority agenda, but a black agenda, because a minority agenda includes women from all ethnicities. Minority includes Asians, Hispanics, it includes gays, it includes everybody, right? It's nothing that's specific for black people. We need something that is specific for black people. We cannot, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep having these situations where everybody else keeps getting pushed in front of us and we just getting scraps, we getting crumbs, and it's not getting us anywhere. We've been doing this for decades and it's not working. So we need to start doing something else to change the political landscape. Me personally, that's the position that I hold.
That's poetry to my ear. I've been even called a black nationalist by my audience. I fully agree with you. The black population of the U.S. was used by other parts of the left to advance the whole minority agenda, including things that don't relate to the black population at all, including LGBT rights and homosexuals, which is all bunched together under minority rights and minority civil rights. And there is a fight for civil rights that was legitimate. It was the one of black people and to some extent the one of gay people for right to marriage simply. But then we are faced with people who want to claim more civil rights, which are essentially claims for inequality in modern society, and they often do it on the back of the black population. And I fully stand with your goal there. I hope that you can develop a political option for black people where they don't get used as a tool against the right wing.
Well, yeah, and I don't want the right wing to start trying to use us as a tool against the left either. You know, because again, that's why I don't want to align. I don't want us aligning ourselves to either party, because I understand it's a chess game, and I understand we are pawns in this chess game. I'd rather us become a more powerful piece than a pawn on this chessboard, and we're not going to do that by just blindly going to the polls every time we go to the ballot and just going straight down the line all left, and that's just we've just been programmed to do that. And you got people like myself that's trying to get our people more politically literate so we can understand what's going on and actually start pushing for real things to happen. Because at this pace, we're just going to things ain't going to be too much better in 50 years. And I want it to be a situation where I already know it's not going to happen in my lifetime, but I would like for my great-great-grandkids to have a better life than me and my predecessors had. That's just me personally. But I would like to get things in motion. That's just me.
Steve, is there a, did you want to follow up anything that you heard?
Well, I'm kind of, it's interesting to me that both of you are actually seemingly advocating for kind of ethnostate, but for different reasons, but ideologically yeah. on the same page. Can you kind of dive into that? Because it's hard for me as an outsider, no offense, to kind of wrap my head around this, right? I'm not black, so I'm not somebody who has a dog in that fight, right? I don't think that
you're not Steve.
That we should.
Are you sure?
What's that?
You're not black.
No, yeah, and surprising. I'm probably the whitest of white people. Unfortunately, I need to work on my tan.
Do you have your 23andMe test?
No, you know what? We were going to do that actually. And one of the questions I'm going to ask you was in regards to this actually, because Kyle and I were actually.
A representative is coming on the show it's probably going to be 6 weeks, but we're going to take the tests, and then a representative from MyHeritage is going to come on to the show and go through our results with us live on the show. So they'll actually walk us through like which parts that we originated from. Yeah.
Nice. So I've been publishing my results.
So, Jeff, when it comes to the genetics, how do we make these determinations? I'm not a race realist, you are, but how do we go about defining what somebody is if they're a black person? Now, again, we all know about the one drop rule, but genetically, I don't know if that's has any significance.
Well, the point with genetic distinctions is that they are kind of arbitrary, but they are there. They are facts of the world that are spread across continuum. Just like, think about the distinction between red and blue and yellow in your paint icon, where you can select all colors between red and blue. Where is it that we decide that it starts being red, and where is it that we decide it starts being blue? The same is true of genetics. And so what I point out in my video, what is white, is it can be anything. It depends on what is your political project with the distinction you're trying to do. Is it white enough to be in Sweden, for example, and to have 100% Nordic genes? Well, yes, I feel that I'm pretty much part of this nuclei, be having French and German genes. Then we progress, we go to Greece, a lot of people, because this is the country where my identification starts separating, and where I say, I don't feel that I'm part of the genetic nuclei of humanity that Greece is in. And they have a lot of mixing events with Turks. And then we advance toward the Middle East, and it's still people with white skin, largely. They have a slightly browner skin, but genetically, they are completely different. Similarly for Russians, for example, they have a Slav population that has identifiable genes that are distinguished from the white Western Europeans and Nordic Europeans. And what I say is the line where you want to put it and where you identify, it's all yours. It's all you decide what do you identify with. And it all depends on what you want to do with the information. Are you looking for dating choices? Are you looking to date within your own race? Or are you looking to build a nation? And then it will depend on what you want to do with the information and who you are and who you feel you are.
Well, let me ask you about dating, like in the races. I always thought that was kind of an odd thing. Like, for example, I don't think that should be even a factor. People are attracted to who they're attracted to. If I find a woman who's black attractive, I have no qualm dating them, right? I don't understand how race needs to be part of the our mating, unless you're saying there's some kind of actual genetic reasons why would we prefer to date somebody of our quote same race as opposed to some other race. Is there any genetic reasons for that? Because again, I find that the people date people because of who they are, not because of their skin color.
I have both statistical reasons and I have personal reasons to give you. Personally, I was just like you when I was young. I was married for 3 or 4 years to a black woman. And I'm a very open guy. I've been dating Asians. I've been dating pretty much around the world. And there is no word to say how comfortable I am with a true 100% white European. It feels good. Everything seems more harmonized. That's how I feel. It's subjective, but I will tell you, if when I was young, someone could have entered it into my brain that, yeah, it does matter. Oh God, the time and the violence I would have saved in my life, the abuse I've been exposed to by being in these relationships where the woman is so different from what your genes expect. That it crashes systematically. Now, it's personal experience. It's not. It doesn't have any statistical value. But the reality is that statistics are coming out, and there's a good article on this on Conservapedia with up to 12 referents that have looked into this. Are single race relationship more better for people? And it seems that they are. It seems that they are for all races. And that, for example, a mixed race couple, black and white in America, is 7 times more likely to lead to homicide, for example, much more likely to lead to violent abuse, much more likely to be finishing into divorce. And so these data are there, and they tell us that not only is the race, the mixed race couple more likely than whites to have these outcomes, they're in fact more likely than black couples to have these negative outcomes. Sometimes the race mixed couple is the worst option of the three possibilities. And this is something you need to take into account if you're dating. I will say, since I've been dating within my own culture and genetic population, I feel so much better. I'm faced with women who have the same feelings as me as to how we should organize our family life and what are our future projects.
Psycho, what do you think from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, I don't disagree with a lot of what he said. Actually, I agree with a lot of what he said. As far as like, I do feel like it's like a black woman is my natural counterpart. Everything's natural there. But I'm also concerned with the whole squeezing out the race thing, especially coming from a black perspective. Because a lot of times what you have with these mixed relationships are these people have interracial relationships, and, you know, let's say they get married, have a child, right? Now they have a mixed baby, right? They have a mixed baby. Now, most of the time, more times than not, this mixed child will get older, and this mixed child, 9 times out of 10, isn't going to pick a black mate. More times than not, this child is going to pick somebody who is either mixed or non-black. And therefore, which means I can have a child with a white person, have a mixed baby, that mixed baby get older, have a child with a white person, and my child is going to come out not black at all. I'm going to have a non-black grandbaby. That's an issue for me personally. I don't want to have non-black grandkids. I want my grandkids to look like me. I want my grandkids to have my culture. I want them to have our language, our demeanor. I want them to represent me. I don't feel like it's anything wrong with people wanting to have that stance. I'm totally fine with his position on interracial dating because I actually share a lot of those views.
What about people that don't want that stance?
There is evolutionary. Oops, sorry. Do you want to speak?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what about people that don't want that stance? Like, example, if I want to marry somebody that is black that I fell in love with, and I think mixed babies are beautiful. I think they're some of the most attractive women I've ever seen are mixed. If I wanted that, if I didn't care that my grandchild had either that was black, white, mixed, whatever, if I had no compunction about that whatsoever, it wasn't a factor in my dating thing, Psycho, would you say that I shouldn't do that, or that you just don't care one way or another what somebody else does?
It's not something I promote. I mean, you know, it's an individual choice everybody has to make. I don't think it should be outlawed, but it's not something I promote. It's something I'm concerned about racial genocide. I really am. I see it happening right before my eyes. There's a lot of when I was younger, it wasn't a lot of biracial kids in my neighborhood. Now you see a whole bunch of biracial kids in my neighborhood. And again, these biracials aren't marrying or dating black people. They are marrying and dating non-black people, which are creating non-black people. I'm really concerned with what happened with the Indians happening to us, and I don't want to see that happen.
No, and I do understand that, and I'll get back to Jeff in a second, but real quick, do you probably agree though, in a couple hundred years or a thousand years or whatever, none of this is going to make a difference as far as people, they won't have the cultural things that we have now. I mean, cultural things have changed quite a bit, even in our own lifetimes. We've had just within generations, cultural phenomena have changed. Cultural standards have changed. So your great grandparent or great grandchildren or your great, great, great grandchildren, they're not going to care one way or another in that society. Don't you think that society will advance at the point where none of this matters to them? It may matter to you, and I respect that. But you're long gone by then, and society has moved on.
Let me follow up on that, too, by asking you this. Ultimately, what is the issue that you have there? Like, because obviously these people are they're marrying – you know, who they find and fall in love with and they click with. And if that's the case, what does it matter ultimately if it we go to a society that doesn't have distinguished races?
I like diversity, and I like the fact that I can go out to New York and go to a certain section of the city and be in Chinatown. I can go uptown and be in Spanish Harlem. I can go a little bit further. I can go up to Brooklyn and be around a bunch of West Indians. I like diversity. And if we have this whole thing where everybody's kind of just one race, where everybody's just mixed and everything else, I don't know. It just don't seem too exciting to me. These mixed person don't look like me. I'm dark skinned black dude. You can't mistake me for anything other than black. And that's how I want black people to be in the future. I don't want to have to the whole race missing thing is why this whole reparations argument is a little bit, a little bit of a problem, because one of the first things he mentioned when we was talking about reparations was the whole mixed lineage and everything else and his alleged love stories that happened during slavery and everything else. This whole race mixing thing is making this conversation complicated. Because now we got to start, messing around with DNA percentages and this, that, and third, which is going to probably end up happening if we do get into reparations. I hold a position. You got to be at least 70% sub-Saharan African, by the way, just to throw that out there, if anybody's wondering, because you're not going to find 100% African out here in this country unless they, directly from Africa. So yeah. Even then you probably still wouldn't find 100% African, but so that's the position I hold. And I'm just more concerned about racial genocide in the future. Now in the short term, it's not gonna hurt anybody. You get with somebody who's black or whatever the case may be, directly you're not hurting anybody, but in the long term it will be an effect to the collective.
Jeff? Okay. And Jeff, let me ask you this specifically then on that. How long would it take, biologically speaking, to become a homogenized society where there is not a lot of phenotypical variety? Would we even be a species by then? I mean, I would think by that time we're not even Homo sapiens sapiens any longer. We're diversification has taken place, and we're some other species where people aren't going to be thinking this way. Because I mean, I think it would take a long time to be that homogenized society, right?
Well, to answer your question, we would need to know the interbreeding rate, and I don't think it would happen in current America. At current interracial breeding, we're probably going to stay separate race forever. There would need to be an event that pushes race mixing more, because the reality is still in America that black people that date black people, Asians date Asians, and whites date whites. As long as that's the case, there will still be a separation. Think about the Jews, for example. A population that has been surviving across the world, traveling from country to country, there's still a genetic distinct nuclei of humanity after hundreds of years of being kicked out of nations and coming back into other nations. Yet they are heavily interbreeding. There's lots of people in the Jewish population. They give up Judaism. They just find a local person and they reproduce with a white person in Europe or an Indian in India. And so they lose a lot of people, but they still remain a genetic distinct nuclei, because those who stay within the community, they have strong ethnocentric preference. So the answer to your question is never, if we keep the current dating patterns. Now, I will say I've been called people people have been calling bullshit on my claims about race mixing and effects on health and various psychological measures. So I'm just going to put it right now in the chat. The name of the study, Health and Behavior Risk of Adolescents with Mixed Race Identity. It's a study by a scientist called J. Richard Udry. And they look at various risk factors for mixed race, and it includes health, general health, fair/poor, waking up tired, skin problems, headaches, sleep problems, depression, smoking, drinking. And all of these measures, they are worse in mixed race adolescents than they are in single races. So there's definitely a medical reason even to justify the point that psychopathias was making, which is, yes, we do need to maintain this beautiful genetic diversity on Earth, which includes absolutely different and distinct phenotypes within humanity. I know what's an Aryan, Swedish, white person, and I want them to keep existing, and I want fully Black people to keep existing too. We must maintain this diversity. It's a beautiful aspect of our population, and there's no reason to force ourselves to mix.
Okay. Steve, was that all you wanted to?
Yeah, that's all I wanted to know on that. Because I agree, though. I don't think it seems with mixing rates will ever become homogenized to the point where there just won't be any races. I don't see how that's going to happen.
Casey, I know that we spoke at the beginning. We've had Casey on the show. He was part of the reparations talk that we had, and he said that he wanted to come in and say something to actually both of you. But I'm not sure if he's still, Casey, if you're still watching, just tag me and I'll let you come in and ask a question if you want to still. I didn't expect the two of you at all to be sort of agreeing towards the end. Like that kind of came out of left field. So was not expecting that at all. That was quite the curveball.
You've not been familiarized with the association between various forms of ethno-nationalism. And we are both ethno-nationalists. And ethno-nationalism doesn't mean whites are better than blacks, therefore we should dominate the world. It means everyone should handle their own freedom and their own people in the way they want without interference from others. People will often remind the simple fact that there are different genetic populations means that there are different behavior, and that the laws I could vote in the US may be oppressive to psycho. And I want a world in which people can determine the laws under which they live and the conditions under which they live.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Saka.
Oh, go ahead. You're about to say something. No, I was just going to say, usually when I have these conversations with white nationalists, this is the part where we actually do agree about. When it comes to certain topics, I don't disagree with them on everything. We might be coming from different positions, but the conclusions that we come up with is pretty much the same. I hold the position that separate but equal. That's what I hold the position of. Like I grew up around my pops, and my pops grew up in the Jim Crow South, and my pops tell me all the time how integration pretty much dismantled the Black community, and he laid out a whole bunch of talking points about how that's the case. My pops grew up in South Carolina and used to make trips before I was born. And he first started coming up. I live in Jersey, and he used to make trips up to New York all the time and everything else. And that's how he met my mother and everything. And when he made the trips, he used to catch the bus from South Carolina to New Jersey before integration. He used to catch the bus from all the way South Carolina to New Jersey, and it would cost him $20 to catch the bus from South Carolina to New Jersey. Right after the Civil Rights Bill was signed, it went from $20 to $72.95 or something like that. It immediately jumped up $50. So what integration did was allow these huge corporations to come into our community and suck our community dry, take all our income out of the community and not put anything in. It killed all the mom and pop stores and everything else that was built on the backs of Black families. They all had to shut down. They couldn't compete with the margin prices that the big corporations was coming in with. So integration actually helped. It actually helped white America more than it helped black America, truth be told. Because what it did was, again, it killed that economic system, which wasn't huge, but it was better because, again, we was able to keep our money circulating within our community. Now our money doesn't circulate within our community. We barely got black businesses, and the ones we do have is hardly supported because, again, they can't compete with the margin prices. They got to charge everything higher than the other store across the street that's selling things damn near half the price. So where are people going to go? They're going to go where it's cheaper. So it's a problem there. So the only way to do this is to kind of work for ourselves. But go ahead. I'll pass the mic.
I was going to ask, on the since you both agree on the ethnostate issue, one thing that I've always, when this has been brought up, sort of wondered is how you would go about implementing that. Like, if that was decided that was going to be a course of action, you know, either way, whether it be a black ethnostate or a white ethnostate, what do you do about the people that aren't going to be willing to leave on their own free, like their own fruition?
What I encourage personally is voluntary moving to an area that's already pretty much white and just make it whiter and whiter with voluntary population movements. And at the end, at the time of separation from the US or from another country or from Europe, if we're talking about a European country, then at the time of separation, you say, all right, there's still 1% black people left in our nation. We give you the choice. You can stay there and we're going to give you the same rights, but don't expect us to be welcoming more black people through our immigration laws. We made this country white. You can still live with us. We will respect your rights. We're not going to bother you. We're not going to put you on a train, but it's going to be a white country that you live in.
Yeah, no, I you know, and I get the idea of a sovereign nation, right? I mean, Indians have a sovereign nation. Their land is their own on tribalistic lands and things we've designated from. I get the concept, but Psycho, how do you think we have a society? Is it even possible to have an integrated society where you have separation but equality? You talk about the Jim Crow
Steve,
laws,
I hate to stop you.
Right?
I hate to stop you there, Steve. Before you ask that, though, I'm interested to hear what you do about the people, sure, that don't want to leave. Like if you I didn't get it down to like a certain percentage, yeah. What happens to the people that refuse to just leave their home or, you know, wherever they were?
Well, they don't have to leave, and I agree with what he was saying. You pretty much just flood the state, like, you know, you get a certain area that everybody agree upon. You kind of just flood it, and you kind of just you know, it's nothing illegal about it. Anything, you know, everybody just moved there, and you know, if people want to stay, they can stay. But eventually, nature is going to run its course, and what's going to happen is people are going to eventually, like, if we all flood, let's say all black people flood Florida, right? Let's just say Florida, for instance, and we all just flood Florida and everything. By nature, what's going to happen is eventually the white people that live there is going to start feeling uncomfortable being there, and they're going to eventually start going other places anyway. Like, we don't have to kick anybody out. They will just, nature's just going to run its course, and they're going to go. Even if that generation don't leave, the future generation is going to eventually pick up and move.
Well, we've seen that
before in Detroit.
Neither of you, I just want to be clear, to make sure this is clear, neither of you are advocating that it would get to a point where any sort of violence or forced removal would be necessary, right?
No, I'm not.
I'm not advocating for it. Yeah, I'm not advocating for it, but I recognize there may be situations in a civil war where if we're reacting, we might have to self-defend. But under no aggression, I would not advocate for aggression.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I think you guys are right. It would be a natural end result of a certain things. I think you mentioned not Chicago, but
Detroit.
Detroit.
Detroit, thank you. Detroit, Michigan. Right. But there's a few
actually,
other places.
On my show, we had a show called What's to Come on my channel, and we've gone through 8 locations in the world that have turned from mixed population to entirely black. And it's feasible. It happens. People feel so pushed by the criminality that increases around them that they leave.
Yeah, I mean, well, I down my in my area, Watts, Compton area, those kind of things, same kind of situations. But Psycho, let me ask you, go back to real quick to the Jim Crow laws. How do you handle that? I don't think that we can have separation and equality in the same society. I don't think they mix together. I think that if you want to have an ethnostate and people want to live somewhere else, then that's feasible. That's a different society at that time. But with the Jim Crow laws, they weren't equal, clearly. I mean, they were forced to be separated. They had to sit when they're told to be sit and things like that. So how would you have changed that to have this integration and have the equality by eliminating these laws? How would you have done it?
Well, we should have been, I was okay with us being separate, but we wasn't equal. That was the problem. Again, I think reparations at that time, which we should have been pushing for at that time, which we didn't, that alone, I think at that moment would have helped our situation out tremendously. And I think we would be in a much better spot today if that's what we actually fought for. But we actually fought for the wrong things, I think. We was fighting for inclusiveness, and I thought that was a mistake because it didn't cost this country anything to just include us and stuff. It didn't cost them anything. That's why it was so quick to get signed off on, because right then and there, they felt like to them, that was them giving us reparations, and that was not the case at all.
So how would you eliminate these laws then? I mean, let's say you wanted separation, but you wanted to sit where you wanted to be sit, but you wanted to have a designated area, but that wasn't forced to be a designated area, like say at a calendar for a dining calendar.
We wanted a chance to build up our own communities without any harassment from outside forces, i.e. the Klan and other groups that was put in place to try to keep us down throughout the Jim Crow South. Because, again, I gave examples of whole towns and cities being destroyed that was pretty much black cities that was flourishing. We wanted that terrorism to end. For the most part, but again, we was fighting for the wrong thing. If we could just got it to where we was equal and not been so focused on trying to be a part of a society that a huge portion of the society wanted nothing to do with us, I think we would have been, again, in a better position. But because all we wanted was just fair laws, so we could be protected under this constitution where we're allowed to do what we do without being harassed. And instead we just figured, well, we get included in everything that will kill everything that's going on. And that would end racism. And as you can see, racism did not end. It's still going on to this day. So that was a mistake in hindsight. In the time they thought they was doing the right thing, but in hindsight, I think it was a big mistake.
Yeah, this is really difficult to hear. So you know what I mean? Like, it just sounds so off, I guess, is the right word, because you're not used to hear. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much like history with the civil rights movement. People, you know, giving their life up for that very thing to be included. And I think personally, I think that's important. I think that you do society a disservice when you separate like that, because both sides, I think, have so much to offer each other. And I know that we're not going to agree on that, but that's just my take on it. Steve, go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I find it difficult to have an integrated society when you have people trying to even be self-segregated. I saw a picture the other day, it wasn't a very old picture, but it was a picture of a classroom, had to be around second, third grade, and had all white kids on one side and all black kids on the other side. And it wasn't that it was imposed. It was just, you know, people sitting where they want to sit, but it was really disconcerting to me. But, my last question is basically.
Real quick, but de facto segregation is already happening. I mean, we already have segregation. Yeah. It's just not mandated, right.
But de facto segregation to me still is a little disconcerting. But my last question is, you're not advocating the position that any one race is better than another. I think you've already stated that. And Jeff, do you don't advocate it as well? You don't think that one race is in any way superior to the other, whether it be genetically, ethically? I mean, do you think there's a differentiation between these races, such as it's they are in equal in some standard? Or do you think that, you know what, you just want separation, you just want the ethnostates, but you know what, as Psycho pointed out, there is an equality between the races. No one race is superior to another race.
Well, there is no such thing as equality in nature. The idea that two races would converge toward equal measures on anything is absolutely contradictory to randomness and to the theory of evolution. Of course, the squirrels are better at climbing trees than the snails. They are faster at it. And in the same way, black people are better on some measures, white people are better on some other measures, and Asians are better on some other measures. So any one measure that you find, it's very unlikely that you will find equality, and therefore we are deeply unequal and different. But different doesn't mean that you have moral superiority. Is the squirrel morally superior to the snail? No, it's just two life forms that found a way to survive in the way they are. And that's how I see white and black people. We are two life forms. We have separate evolutionary histories that make us different. That's not a reason to annihilate all of the life forms except your own. It's not a reason to be superior to the other or dominate the other or determine what they do. What I'm for is finding a solution on planet Earth where each of these life forms can maintain their own presence in the world and live under the best conditions for themselves. But if we were to think about a perfect world for squirrels and a perfect world for snails, it would be two different worlds. That's why we need two different states and two different countries, so that one of us doesn't oppress the other.
But Jeff, I think you may have misunderstood my question. I'm not talking about from biological standard, from a phenotype to selective pressures, right? Right. I mean, obviously a black person is going to be more resistant to the sun than I'm going to be resistant, right? So if that's a selective pressure, then yes, there are biological differences in that regard. I'm not asking about that. I'm talking about equal under the eyes of the law and to society as a whole. I mean, we're not talking about equal, some kind of equal when it comes to selective pressures. Clearly, phenotypes are going to be different, and if you have a phenotype that's going to be better to meet a certain condition environmentally, perfect, we get that. But I'm talking about equality under the eyes of basically society and the law more than anything else.
Well, there's two elements to your question. One is descriptive and one is prescriptive. So descriptive, it's the state of the world currently. Are we equal under the law? Well, no, because we are so different on so many measures that any given law will be punishing more of a race than others. Take, for example, the drug laws. They end up getting a lot of black people in prison in the U.S. I'm against them. I'm a libertarian, so I think that people should be able to smoke drugs. But the fact is that these laws have been having an asymmetric effect. So any one law will actually punish more of a certain race than other, unless the two races are equal on that criminal trait. So I will say that's the descriptive aspect. No, we are not equal under current law in the nations we live in. Now, what I desire would be, yes, that we were equal under the law. In fact, that we would have each our different set of laws. Personally, I'm for separation and segregation such that I will never have to live under a law voted by a single black person. And what I would want is the same liberty for black people. I would want them to have countries where none of my votes or laws or constitutions that I write would ever affect them.
Okay, I'm not sure I agree with that, but Psycho, I think the thing is that these laws are just unjust, right? The drug laws has nothing to do with the fact that there's inequality in the law. I think a lot of these laws weren't written to get black people in jail more often than white. I think there's something to be said about, especially with the marijuana thing. There's clearly that some of these laws were racist. I cannot argue against that, but that's just a bad law, right? I mean, do you agree, Psycho, that yes, we have bad laws, but if these laws were written properly, then there should be equality under the law?
If they was written properly, if they wasn't aimed to target specific groups of people, then yeah, that would be the case. But unfortunately, that's not the case. You know, we definitely do have evidence to point to what you were stating about the drug laws being targeted towards black people. You know, Richard Nixon's administration has been, people from his administration has been quoted as such. You know, the war on drugs, aka the war on black people, has been going on for a long time. You can date back to when what was that, the 1950s, when they had this whole marijuana hysteria. when they used to talk about how weed makes you want to rape white women and cause hallucinations and all types of other stuff. Yeah. And look at us now. Now weed is about to be a recreational legalized drug in this country within the next, I'll say, less than 10 years. We already got cigarette businesses pulling out of the cigarette business and going into the marijuana business right now as we speak, because they know what's about to happen. So, you know, these whole things have been put in place for quite some time. And it's real, and, you know, now they're trying to lighten up on the drug laws, because now the drug laws have seeped outside of the inner cities, and now they are all in the suburbs. You got this opioid epidemic that's destroying white communities and everything else. And now all of a sudden they want to be easy on drugs. Now they want to make all these easy drug laws. Now they want to peel back and everything, because they're not doing this for black people. They're doing this because the drugs wasn't contained in the isolated areas they wanted to be contained in. Now we're done spilled over. So now they're trying to change the laws. But, you know, again, it just goes to show that these laws are not built to be equal amongst all people. It's focused on being, you know, fair to one group of people, and that's it.
Do you worry, though, that if you were to achieve a ethno state between the two races, let's just go with those two, whites and blacks, that it would then become a sort of, we would no longer see each other as Americans altogether, or, you know, just humans. It would be a us versus them thing, and there would be more instances of violence, because it would then be a, oh, well, you know, if one of the whites and the blacks crossed paths, it would be essentially this team versus this team. I mean, one injustice to this one is an entire injustice to everybody on this side. So don't you think you'd worry about potentially that level of violence getting out of hand between these two ethno states?
Personally, I'm not worried. Just look at Canada and the U.S. There are two countries that they are defined differently, and we don't step on each other's toe. In fact, I think most of the violence problem, interracial violence problem, is at the individual level. It's individual criminals committing crime across the races, more often than not from black to white populations. I think once you have two different countries, your threshold for violence becomes a military invasion of some kind, and that's more difficult to organize, and it will be subject to much more reasonable considerations, I believe.
And Psycho?
Yeah, yes. I think, you know, if it's two different ethno states, we won't have too much interaction with each other. Like he said, you got nations all the time. I mean, you know, we write in between two nations. You know, we got got Canada above us, Mexico under us. You know, like, so there's no animosity there. Well, not to the point where any city war. You know, like, honestly, you know, it's animosity with the immigration thing and everything else that third. But for the most part, you know, we get along with our neighbors over here. So I don't see how that couldn't be the case here. You know, like, long as nobody's infiltrating each other's territory, I don't see how that's even a problem. But, you know, you always had that chance that somebody might try to, you know, cross borders and everything else. And that will be dealt with accordingly if that does happen.
But we do have issues with them now. I mean, the one of the most contentious issues now is building a wall to separate our neighbor to the south.
Right, that's immigration. Right. I'm talking about
the government, though. That's sort of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, they arguing like over who's paying. Yeah, they arguing over who's paying for the wall and everything else. But for the most part, like, we're not in danger of going to war with Mexico.
No, and my ultimate point, though, is that if you have these with Mexico and Canada, we're kind of integrated still. You know, like, people can come and go as they please into Mexico from America and up into Canada, you know, for whatever reason. If you had two ethno states, you would probably want to keep those, like, absolutely separate. And the instances whether it be territory or whatever, it just seems like it would eventually lead to a
I mean, people can visit, you know, but they can't become citizens, but they can visit.
You don't think that puts strain on society, though? I mean, you don't think that the people that decide not to go live in some kind of ethnostate, they're not going to be frowned upon, not going to be treated different, especially by the people that live in the ethnostate? I mean, if they come visit, be like, hey, you're not one of us. It does seem to lead to isolationism and lead to us versus them mentality.
Look at Israel and Palestine.
I mean, it seems that both of our hosts have been buying the globalist talking points totally, which are false.
We get deep to this. Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. Exactly.
It's not economic deals that integrate nations together that keep us from killing each other. It's other considerations totally. Look at Trump, his arrival to the U.S. I think the world has never been in a state of peace as it is right now. Yet we are destroying our NATO alliances and our various global alliances in the military sector, in the economic sector. He brought it down to single country deals rather than overall global deals. And yet no one is making war. I think it's an illusion to believe that economic and economic communication and kind of opportunities being open for travel between the two countries is what keep people from going at war.
Would you have a different label for somebody? Like, for say, a black person didn't want to go live in a specific area. They felt that they wanted to be, you know, just like anybody else. I think there would be that us versus them mentality, whether I'm a globalist or not. I think it's something that just happens in a society. They'd be like, hey, you're not one of us. You know, you're one of them. You're one of the outsiders.
George Soros got
you. If there's balkanization of the U.S., there's definitely going to be a part of the U.S. that refuses identitarianism. And if they have some military force, they might even keep a part of America multiculturalist. We could call it the multiculti U.S. New Nation, or give it a new name. And they would refuse to join either the black or white ethnostates.
And don't we have that kind of, feeling anyway? Like, if I was to move out in Poland, they're going to look at me as I'm not one of them. If you move out to Haiti, they're going to look at you like you're not one of them. So I mean, you know, we already have this aspect, you know, across the globe.
Well, if y'all are going to create your own ethnostate, then I am going to San Francisco and set up the first all gay ethnostate. I will be the head of that.
There you go. Why don't we just have, like, you know, gays have one area, you know,
I'll take that on.
Blacks have another area, hey, Jews have
another
area.
We already got it.
Separate everything.
We already got it. We get
the all American gay spot.
Whatever gay area you keep is going to be unpopulated a generation from now. So you cannot have a gay ethnostate because they can't make babies. Unless you have a system to bring in to reproduce between couples of lesbians and gays, I don't know.
Oh, they have that's ways totally
fine
now.
With us. No. That's totally fine with us. It's totally fine with us. I'm of the, like, I like to be able to give kids back. So maybe what we can do is just babysit the surrounding ethnostates kids. We can just bring them in and babysit and then bring them, send them back. But yeah,
I'm fine with. Wait, quick. Do you have a separate society that's just for gay black people? I mean, where does it kind of end?
Me? Oh, no. Uh-uh.
Are you asking me?
No, I'm asking
anybody. If you have one area that you're gay,
I'm assuming it can't be race-based if it's a gay ethno-state. I'm assuming. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's dick-based.
But even if you look at... Even if you look at the gay culture, they're de facto segregated as well, because you go to certain communities, you know, you have the little gay sectors of the community, you know, out here, you know, we got the village out here. He just mentioned San Francisco and everything else. Like, so, you know, you have little isolated communities where gays feel comfortable amongst each other and they all move amongst each other as well. So it's not just a race thing, you know, people tend to want to live around people they feel comfortable with. And, you know, so, you know, it's not a weird concept when you really think about it.
I get that, and I agree with you 100% on that. That does happen, right? I mean, we have little Vietnam, little China. You know, we have different pockets of isolated ethnostates already. But if you have a white society, that seems to be looked down upon. Like, I used to live near Beverly Hills area, right? That was at the time. Van Nuys and Beverly Hills and Bel Air and all these other areas were primarily white, and they were frowned upon. I mean, they were looked upon as, oh, this is a a class warfare type thing, rather than, like you said, and I'm not justifying this, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but this was the case, you know, as well as I do. You go for a little bit further down, you go to Compton, you go to Watts, you go to Chino, you go to some of their areas, then it is an entirely different landscape, right? Mm-hmm. So why is it that if a white culture was in one specific area because that's where they just choose to live, and it happened to be affluent, because clearly Beverly Hills and Bel Air is an affluent area, is there a charge to be made there that is more of a poverty type thing, or if it's a race, or if it's a social class, or if it's a economic diversification? It's hard to make these distinctions, is it not?
This has got to be the last question too, because we do have to get the super chats. I know that we I have 900 more questions, but we do have to get to these other questions. So be brief, if you will, Psycho.
Okay, you want me to respond to what you just said?
Just real briefly, yeah. I mean, what? How do we know if it's because of race, it's because of social class, or because of economic standing?
I believe it. Well, social class has a lot to do with it, you know, but... You know, me personally, I don't have a problem with like when he was talking about his ethno state and everything else, you know, all white communities and everything. Like, we already have all white communities, you know, the suburbs for a long time was all white communities until, you know, black people actually started making a little bit more money and actually started moving into some of these communities. But a lot of times these black people move in these communities, you know, the property value goes down. And, you know, this is when the whole redlining thing comes into play. And, you know, a lot of times a lot of these black communities that you see right now, we just discussed it earlier, used to be white communities. And a lot of times, these, you know, white people tend to see too many black people around. They tend to leave naturally. You know, white flight starts to happen. You got a county, the most prestigious black county in this country, which is PG County out in the DMV area, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. They huge black population, middle class families, middle class suburb areas and everything else that used to be white at one point. And, you know, now it's all black, and it's flourishing for the most part. And that, I just want to see a whole lot more of that, but on a larger scale. But I like to use PG County. You can look it up. But I like to use PG County as a scale of what could be a black ethno state.
Okay.
All right. I'll read these super chats, and then we'll let you guys have your final word, and then we'll call it a night. This went completely different than I thought it would. I thought we would be trying to keep the two of you at bay from each other, but you both wound up agreeing and on a friendly conversation. And it's just it feels weird. I don't know why, but it feels weird. It feels like you two should be angry with each other. But you're not. Regal Migdal says, hope you're talking about the Trans-Saharan trade. Reed Chabernot says, make sure post-slavery peonage and the Muslim enslaving of Americans during Jefferson is brought up, please. Love you guys, and the Dusty Show was great. Says Frito Serbia says, why do you talk about slavery in past tense when Africans are still slaves? Do Africans owe African Americans any reparations for capturing them? Do you want to speak to that, Psycho?
Yes, they absolutely do. But my concern is not what they owe us right now. My main concern is what this country owes us. And then once we get what's owed to us from here, then we can go after the Africans that actually sold us off. But yes, I they're not exonerated from reparations either. To answer that question,
would this extend to Native Americans too?
The Cherokee, I believe, owe us something. Yeah, to a certain extent, I would probably say. But again, my main concern is the government of this country and everything. Yeah, the Native Americans absolutely own slaves, and there was something else you mentioned.
Oh, I mean, should they be given reparations too for us coming in and taking?
Well, they already received reparations. They got tax exempt land. They got tax exempt land. They get free scholarships. They get monthly checks.
Okay.
They get reparations. Yeah, they already get it. Okay. They, what was the first super chat you read? I want to kind of respond to what I think it was the first one you read.
The first one was we're talking about the Muslim enslaving of Americans.
Oh, the Saharan. Oh, the Saharan slave trade. Yes, the Muslim slave.
The trans-Saharan Arabic slave.
Arabic, yeah, the Arabic slave trade. The Arabic slave trade was actually worse than the transatlantic slave trade, and actually, the transatlantic slave trade ended before the Arabic slave trade. Arabic slave trade actually was still going on many years later. So yes, that slave trade was actually worse.
Okay. Sisfredo Serbia says, one room, one white man, one black man. Who is superior and why? I think we touched on that when we asked them about, is there a superior one? They both answered that one already. Sisfredo said, was life better with Jim Crow laws? Beta. We talked about that too. Reed Shapiro says, adversity can be a net benefit. Let's enslave you. The ex-Hindu atheist says you don't get reparations for slaves since humans aren't supposed to be property or equipment. Then they went on to say, give them reparations, deduct pay for the labor that slaves performed to charities for minorities. Their wealth will go on, and the books will be balanced. And then finally they say, give them land to build cult compounds, shaking my head. So there's a lot there. I think what they're saying is they don't want to give money to individuals as far as reparations go. Maybe take the money that they would give to those individuals and apply it towards a community benefits. You know, maybe fixing up impoverished sections of cities, that sort of thing. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think that's, a nice gesture, but I don't think that's for them to say, for what black people should do with the money or what they want us to do with the money. What do I think we should personally do? I do personally think we should funnel our money within ourselves, not immediately go out here and start buying up things like crazy and doing all kinds of stupid stuff with our money. I think we should strategically use our money to build up a foundation in an economic system, which in the case where we actually keeping our money circulating and start building up small things and everything and able to compete with other large corporations within our community. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask real quick, what do you do about either African-Americans here that didn't or aren't descendants of slaves, and white lineages that didn't own slaves or fought to free slaves, whether it be worked on the Underground Railroad? What do you do about those people, and how do you go about separating who's going to pay and who doesn't?
Again, that's something that's going to come out of taxpayers' money. And again, we taxpayers have been paying reparations to people for decades that their ancestors had nothing to do with their wrongdoings. Again, none of my ancestors are German, but we pay every year. We pay the Jews every year. Everybody in my family pays the Jews every year. But we had nothing to do with putting them in gas chambers at all. So, this is a problem for the government to figure out. But they have no issues dipping into government funds for everything else, but it's except for to give us reparations. So, that's just something people just going to have to deal with.
Okay. Ryan Wall did not leave a message. Thank you for the super chat. The ex-Hindu atheist, please ignore my last super chat. I came in late and made an assumption. Whoops. So I read it already. And then the ex-Hindu atheist said, ignore all of my super chats, please. Well, sorry about that.
A little too late.
Particle man. let me see. Particle man says, JF can volunteer to move back to Texas and work outdoors for the state performing manual labor, then praise the slavery benefits.
If I was living in Africa and I was forced to be a slave in Texas, I would be happy about it. That would be an improvement of my life. But since I'm a Quebecois and a free nation and a white person, it is not an advantage for me to move to Texas.
I got... Hey, but you're a person who claims to love your culture, claims to want to preserve your culture, but yet you saying leaving your culture, having your culture stripped from you, your language and everything else will be an improvement. So I'm a little bit confused with that logic right there. So we should protect our culture by any means necessary. The next minute you're saying, no, I was totally stripped my culture and best be fine with that because that will be an improvement.
There goes the honeymoon.
The thing is that the slaves were taken from Africa in circumstances that we tend not to remind to people, whereby about a third of the population of every country in Africa back then were slaves. And so the culture that you would have preserved if you wanted to be an African nationalist back then would be a culture where local slaves would exist. In fact, the transatlantic slave trade is evaluated to be only about 5% of the slave trade worldwide back in the days. And so it was only a part of it. And yes, we were depriving people of a certain culture, but let's not live under the impression that we were depriving them of a culture where they would be free. They would have been slaved in Africa.
That's not guaranteed, but I still don't see how you would say that this. Well, I can see how you would say it because you're on the outside looking in. But no, absolutely not. I don't agree with that at all. Like to sit up here and say you were in a better spot here and you're looking at hindsight and you're looking how this country is now compared to how Africa is right now. That's just disingenuous. Again, you got that flag back there waving around in your background. I don't have no African flag I could wave in my background because I don't know which country my ancestors derived from. So it's real easy for you to say with your French flag back there, knowing your ancestors came from France, knowing your language, knowing your culture and everything else, to say, they should be fine just getting rid of all their culture because they're in such a better position here than Africa is right now and everything else. Well, you know what we had to do to get in the spot that we're in now, which ain't the best spot in the world, by the way, because we are the most impoverished people in this country per capita. It's not even close. So I'm a little, again, perplexed.
But my point is, yeah, I understand that you don't know which flag to identify to in Africa. I'm telling you, if you knew, you would be the one wearing this flag here, and you would be the proponent of slavery because your country has done slavery. All of the countries of Africa has been engaged in slavery. And if you were to wave that flag proudly, it wouldn't be with a slavery-free society, as I can do with the flag of Quebec, because your society would have been it would have been flooded through of slavery through the centuries.
Yeah, but slavery is not going on right now.
Yeah, right now those societies seems to have evolved toward non-slavery, and I would say it's probably a consequence of the existence of white people.
That you can't really back that up, but okay.
I do think that the advancements of civil rights by Europeans and Americans have been leading this world forward in terms of human rights, and have even been influencing Africa.
I can argue that slave revolts is what actually did it. I can argue that it's the slave revolts. I could argue that the slave revolt in Haiti in particular is what was a very key factor into how people view slavery today, because they saw the backlash of what can happen. They saw how a whole island could get taken over, and how they saw the errors in their ways, because after Haiti, slavery dropped off tremendously. People, all of a sudden, the whole slave trade had to take. They had to restructure how they did everything. They had to change shipping patterns and everything until they eventually stopped. Haiti had a lot to do with it. That's what had a lot to do with it. It wasn't because white people had some epiphany that this is a bad thing. No, it became bad for business.
You, Jeff, you work with. Neuroscience. So this might be a good question to ask you. It seems like over the course of human, not evolution in terms of like the standard, but our evolution in terms of societies. If you go back to the early you know, BC era up until now, it seems like there is a slow trend towards the way that people are treated as a whole. Like, for example, the slaves that built the pyramids, stuff like that. People could essentially be working next to somebody. They fall over dead. You know, they move the person out of the way, move on. It's no big deal. We slowly move across time up until where we are today. And each generation, it seems like, fights a sort of the whoever's in the majority looking back and trying to pull someone else up instead of it not staying with that trend of, well, these people are less than we are. So we can enslave them. We can make them work until they drop dead, and then there'll be nothing, no qualms about it. We seem to be a little bit more sort of, empathetic or caring. What is that, that brings that on as a whole, I guess, for society as a whole?
I think we're definitely on the evolutionary path that you mentioned. And so as an evolutionary biologist, I ask myself, what could favor more and more empathic people who believe more and more that they are entitled to claim from the majority for equality? It's essentially, why did white societies converge towards socialism? And the answer is that we're farming socialism. As long as you have a small government rewarding a small number of people for being agents of the government, or for claiming certain civil rights, for claiming that they are part of an oppressed class that needs some form of reparation. We've been doing that for more than 100 years, and your government size will grow and grow with more victim claims, because essentially we have farmed into our societies people who feel entitled to the wealth of others, because we have not enforced proper boundaries between the properties of individuals, where we say, no, you don't have the right to steal money. In fact, today we say to young people, yeah, it's okay to steal money in the form of taxes and redistribute it according to needs. Now, this whole distribution of wealth according to needs, where does it come from evolutionarily? It probably comes from our childhood. I think that the leftist mind, the socialist mind, is a child mind, because the child is faced with lots of brothers and sisters, and essentially the resources must be distributed equally for everyone to be surviving, whereas the adult is in competition with others. He's trying to acquire wealth that other adults will not have. That is the foundation of capitalism, and it's a very adult behavior. It's not an adult that you would have in front of your child. Your child, you would be giving them something. The problem is that this behavior that was originally a family-based behavior, I think, has evolved into a political preference, such that today we have children of all kinds claiming all sorts of oppression and claiming reparations in the form of taxes, preferential employment, and essentially stealing from the rich to give to the poor.
Mm. Okay. Oh, and by the way, just to clear something up in the chat, yes, Maggie Bryson did come on the show. Yes, there were workers that built the pyramids. For the most part, it was slave labor. That is not even controversial. So I don't know why there are people that saying that it wasn't slave labor. It definitely was slave labor.
I thought they actually had ordinary, like regular people working on the pyramids too.
They did too. Yeah. The way Dr. Bryson was explaining, they got special like. Lodging, you know, they didn't have to do the difficult pieces of the pyramid. They were crap. You know, yeah. But as far as like the backbreaking stuff, like transferring the bricks and stuff like that from the quarries and all that, yeah, it was definitely slave labor. I should tell you that. Flamio says that 9 facts about slavery they don't want you to know. Kent Hovind, CPA. I'm half black from the waist down, so I sympathize. Oh man, Ryan Wall, holding our black votes hostage results in more conservative presidents with regressive anti-minority policies. I'd rather back the lesser of two evils. Sorry, not sorry.
I hate the lesser two equals argument. I don't subscribe to that. That's the argument we've been subscribing to for a long time. There was a point in time before the Civil Rights Bill, we thought the Republicans were the lesser of two evils. We was traditionally conservative before the Civil Rights Bill. And then when the Civil Rights Bill got signed, we all flipped and we all turned liberal, right? And we did that because we was under the guise that the liberals actually had our backs, just like we was under the guise that the conservatives had our back. The reason why we were so conservative was because Abraham Lincoln was actually a conservative. So therefore, being that we had the illusion that he was freeing the slaves out the kindness of his heart, that we all aligned ourselves with the conservative party. And we voted faithfully conservative for the next 100 years until the Civil Rights Bill. And then we flipped, and now, and even when Lyndon B. Johnson signed that bill, he was quoted as saying, after we sign this, we're going to have these niggers voting for us for the next 200 years. And so far, he's one quarter right. He's 25% right, because that's what we've been doing since he signed that bill. And I feel like, me personally, I feel like the Democrats don't promise us nothing, because they don't need to promise us anything, because they already know that at least 88% of us as a collective is going to run to those polls and vote for them every single election. So why should they promise us anything? They don't have to promise us anything. We got to get out of this whole lesser two evils mindset. That's why nobody promises nothing. That's why we pretty much get played as political chumps. So we got to wake up. Yes, holding our vote hostage is necessary. Absolutely.
Okay. Jesse Bramley, thank you for the super chat. So leaving a message. The ex-Hindu atheist, I agree for reparations. How much is what we need to decide? Nathan Dettinger says, give him a loan reparation.
Well, but we're still online. It could be just buffering, which means it'll still go through, but it's just buffering.
It did crash. Well,
I hope it wasn't the N-word.
No, but it's been.
And, it could be.
YouTube
it's
monitors.
It's come back.
We're back. Yeah, it was just buffering.
Okay. That was weird timing.
You broke it, Psycho. You see this? You broke the internet.
I was just okay.
Be John.
All right. So I just got a couple more here. Vibrantly Brantley says, thank you for providing a platform so all this idiocy can be brought to light. Drunken Crow says, not a dumpster fire this time, more like a trash can fire. The ex-Hindu atheist evolution doesn't make any statement about race, equality or inequality. Does either of you have an issue with that?
That's true. It doesn't.
Okay. The ex-Hindu atheist. Wow, thank you for all the super chats. So where will it end? Race, gender, sexuality, religion, cults? And then what about those who mix? Ostracize them for fuck's sake?
My point, sure. Yeah, I agree with the ex-Hindu atheist. Those are the exact kind of points I'm making too. Where do you break it down to the fine-grained structure of society that you're just basing things on race, sexual orientation, gender, religion? You're just going to have a non-homogeneous society that's consistent of individual compounds at some point. I don't think that's what America was really founded on. I don't think that was the principle of America myself.
Yeah. So discussions of diversity, we're always at a certain level of diversity, and we're looking for a certain level of homogeneity. I think that once people would be in a white nation and they have a social contract and they feel that they're not going to be the victim of disproportionate amount of violence from any subgroups, then they would have no reason to further segregate. But I think we're definitely in a situation right now where there's enough difference between the populations so that they feel founded, they feel grounded and decided that they must separate. And you say America wasn't built with the idea of segregation. Well, it was originally, and I think it's what made America great, this idea that it was a white European country. I don't think it would have been the same if you were welcoming anyone. And this whole idea of welcoming anyone and welcoming diversity in any direction, it must be false. You must agree, for example, that there are certain types of criminals you don't want walking around your street. Well, there are also certain kinds of people I would prefer have a different nation so they can vote for their laws and I don't have to be submitted on their laws.
Well, I think that's a false equivalence. Okay. You're talking about criminalization. I mean, granted, we don't want criminals roaming the street, but they could be of any other class. I mean, we're so talking about America.
That not all diversities are good, right?
I was just about to say, on the flip side, I want my kids to be able to go to school without getting shot up by everybody. You know,
it'd be nice, right?
Yeah, it'd be real nice. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, just because somebody upset because they didn't get a prom date, I'm a little bit worried about that. So yeah, I concur. I don't want to be around a bunch of criminals of other subsets.
Right.
Okay. There's just three more here, and then we'll be done. Drunken Crow says, "Long live Gayconda." I guess that's what we're calling San Francisco now. Gayconda. Spike Smith says, "Amazing." Trent Benefield, what dollar amount would you assign for reparations? This seems like a really contestable number. So, XW, for you, Psychopath, what number would you what's a good number for reparations, in your opinion?
I don't have a set number. I do believe this country owes us trillions of dollars. Be honest with you, I would love to have some land. I would love to have some tax exemption. I would like to have the same things that the Native Americans got from this country. I would like to follow that model as far as reparations go. Be honest with you, I would like to have some free land, tax exemption, some payments, and again, free scholarships.
Okay.
That's one argument I haven't had the time to make, but I think if we were to actually calculate the reparation number, it would be a negative number. Because at this point, we've been paying lots of taxes that have benefited the black population in the U.S. And I think that if we were to really do the counts, we would end up realizing that black people owe some things to white.
I think it's that diluted.
Because every white person in America is contributing net positive.
There you go. Yeah, that would be weird.
Go ahead, Jeff. Hey, I think you're in the middle.
You owe me $10, man.
No, I was just saying that it's based on the fact that white people have been a net positive in average for the state, and in the state disproportionately benefits black people through social welfare services and costs relating to prison. And so I think that the count would be hard to make, but if we were to make it for real, we would find out that we've been paying more than enough reparations.
Are you saying welfare is a form of reparations?
Well, it's certainly money taken against our will that heavily compensates the black population. I'm not saying I'm for welfare. I'm against it. But the fact is we're paying for welfare.
You do realize welfare was originally started by the Roman Empire, right? Who is not black. You do realize that welfare came into this country before it was even a country. You do realize that, right? Before we even had the revolutionary country had so to sit up here and make this disingenuous claim that welfare is a form of reparations is kind of a joke. Yeah. Not to mention corporate welfare rapes this country way more than social welfare that you're talking about. This country has been bailed out so many times by corporate welfare, it's amazing. And that has nothing to do with black people. And not to mention the average person in this country pays an annual total of their taxes that go towards welfare is $6. $6 annually. That's how much the average person in this country pays in taxes that goes towards welfare. So this whole idea that welfare is killing everything in this country and is predominantly a black thing, even though it's mostly white people that's on welfare, it's actually a joke. So no, welfare is not any type of form of reparations whatsoever.
Well, first, on your first point, I will say I haven't made a claim about the initiation or the origin of welfare. I don't care if it comes from the Roman. I'm talking about the last few decades of life in America. And I'm saying that, yes, welfare programs are a net transfer from white populations to black population that should be accounted were we to ever calculate reparations. And on the $6 point, I say this is a very restrictive definition of welfare. When I say welfare, I mean it in the liberal authoritarian sense and the large sense of every services that the state provides to people based on being poor or being part of a community that has more needs. And that includes Medicare, it includes all sorts of programs that is not just the food stamp stuff. In fact, I include even the cost of prisons, because it's a cost we have to undergo to maintain certain populations in our world. And these costs are enormous, much more than $6 per year.
Well, yeah, but this country makes a lot of money off these prisons. Prison is an industry. Let's not get this twisted. Like, this is the reason why all these private prison systems are in place. And again, to touch back on this welfare thing real quick, people act like, you know, people on welfare just sitting around not doing anything, collecting food stamps and this, that, third. They all unemployed. Actually, these welfare people aren't unemployed. They're actually underemployed. You know, a lot of these people are working. A lot of these people work part-time jobs and everything else, and they just getting extra help to help them make means, to help them make the ends meet. Like, a lot of these people, like, they force these people to go on programs and everything else and training and get them part-time jobs or full-time jobs. So these people are not just sitting around not doing anything that's on welfare. These people, most of these people are actually working.
It's a form of equity. In retail, I had a lot of people that were like that. They were working, but they weren't working enough hours to have a sufficient cost of living. So they would be on some form of welfare to help subsidize that. That is what equity would be in a society. That is what I've seen more often than people that are unemployed on welfare.
Ex-Hindu atheist, this is the actually Mike McAtheist says $1 million, and the final super chat says, "What about the LGBTQ plus community? Will they be safe in these ethno states? I doubt it."
So, well, there's a good question. Yeah, I say we should have an understanding and empathic approach toward gay and LGBT, but I think we should favor reproductive behavior through incentives. And so I'm totally for denying them the right to marriage. They could have a symbolic marriage, but not have the associated benefits. I'm all for saying, look, our society is for reproductive people, and gay people exist because they had parents who reproduced. And therefore, any sort of incentivizing of reproduction wouldn't be wrong. It wouldn't be a wrong toward gay people. It would just be saying, look, as a gay person, your existence depends on dicks entering vaginas, so let's do it.
That's why I don't think you have to worry about that, because I wouldn't want to stay in the whatever is the normal America, you know, like the America we have now. I don't think you'd have an issue with usually it's mindsets that are going to group together. You know what I mean? And I don't think that you'd have that much of an issue with, unless it's, what's his name? What is his name? Is it Jack Donovan?
I have no idea.
Is his name? What about him? Yeah, it's that weird word that we were reading the other day, where they do like these primal weekends. But he's for an ethno state. But they like have these weekends where they go and they just, all the men have sex with other men all weekend. It's like, it's called a primal weekend, something like that. Never heard of it. Yeah, look up.
Never been
Jack Donovan. Yeah, Jack Donovan.
I don't think things are disincentive. I don't think that by denying things like gay marriage, it has anything to do with whether we're going to have procreation more or not. People that are gay are not going to go, hey, I don't want to be gay because I can't get married. It doesn't happen that way. These are just disenfranchised things. I don't see why it makes any difference if we give the right to get married or if they don't, whether it's civilly, whether it's in the church. It makes no difference as long as they have the ability to do so like any other person. Again, I never would know one gay person
that you said, claim
I don't want to be gay because I can't get married. That has never happened in the history of humanity, I don't think.
We don't know what will happen with a society that actively favors gay people and makes them a socially desirable outcomes and uses symbolic things like marriages to kind of say, yes, it is accepted in our society. Personally, I would say we don't know what will happen 20 years from now. Will we have increased the amount of people who converge toward gay lifestyles? Maybe we will. We just don't know. People make the claim that, oh, no, you're born gay and there's nothing to be changed about it. I'm not sure at all we have the data to make this case. What I would say is we don't know to what extent societal influences have impacts on transsexual behavior and gay behavior. And the early data, the kind of anecdotal cases we can look at right now, which are, for example, children converting to transgenderism because it's a fashion in their school or they feel that they will be encouraged by their parents to do so, tells us a very different story. But I can't wait so that we have the data to say it for sure, that the way we do marketing for gay people in our society is helping people, is favoring more people becoming gay.
Yeah, I
don't necessarily see that, though. How is that? I'm not a big fan of the born gay thing. I think there's a nature versus nurture to be had. And I think there has to, in order to say you're born gay, you have to definitively say there are genetic and hormonal reasons right. that are the only reasons. And I don't think that's the case. I think there has to be some conditions where it is more of a nurturing thing. But it's not one size fits all.
You don't think people are born gay? You don't think people are born gay?
Well, I mean, not as a whole. I mean, I would say most people have the propensity to be gay when they're born because of genetic and hormonal reasons. Yes, but there has to be some things that are still environmental. There's not 100% one way or the other. Right. I mean, Jay, would you agree from a biological standpoint?
Yeah, I think that first, I don't believe in the nature-nurture distinction. It's all happening together. It's like the area of a rectangle. Does it depend on its width or on its length? Well, it depends on the two being multiplied. And genes and an environment interact in that way. We have no idea right now. If we were to abolish gay marriage and abolish any sort of cultural reference to the idea that the homosexuality is great and changing sex is great, what would be the impact over 30 years on our nation? Would there be less transsexuals? I suspect there would be less, but we don't have the scientific data to make that claim.
Yeah,
it'll be more fabulous. We know that.
Yeah, I agree with the notion that it's hard to prove whether or not people are actually born gay. I think it's more of a preference myself. That's my position. But as far as whether or not gays would be allowed in either ethno state, I don't
see how they're not going to want to be. They're not going to want to be in your ethno state. Let me just cut you off right there. They're not going to want to be anywhere near that.
I would agree with you because most gay people are into interracial relationships, and that alone will probably keep them away from the ethno state. But I wouldn't.
They've been discriminated against, and they don't want to discriminate against others. They've been in that boat, and they don't want to see it done to. They don't want to be a part of that.
You think black gays feel that way? I don't know if black gays feel that way. Maybe white gays. I can't speak for them, but black gays. I've had conversations.
I'm saying for